Hello, this is Mary Mortland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, July 3rd, 2025. A top of the page of the News Gazette, Happy 4th of July. Bement Grand Marshal enjoying the ride. For decades, Kirk Birch has been providing transportation for Bement students of all ages. On Friday, the 62-year-old owner of Birch Bus Service will hand the keys over to someone else and enjoy the ride. Grand Marshal at Bement's 4th of July parade, 2 p.m. start. Birch will relax in the back seat of a Jeep as his nephew tools around town. I'm used to having 30 to 40 kids on the bus, the 1981 Bement High School grad said. When I don't have to drive, it's odd, I'm not in charge. A three-sport standout at Bement, Birch took over his father's bus business in 2007. In 2014, he took on Cerro Gordo schools with a fleet that now consists of 18 vehicles. Friday's celebration will include a gaggle of family and friends, including his mom, two sisters, wife, daughter, son-in-law, and two grandchildren. He said he was taken aback when told the Grand Marshal honors at a parade he's attended basically every year. It's very humbling that the community thinks that much of me and my family, he said. Ready to sweep visitors away. And then there's a photo with the caption, "The Arcola Broom Palace, a three-story, nearly 6,000-square-foot attraction paying homage to Arcola and its role in the craft broom industry, offered those who played a part in its creation a weekend sneak peek ahead of its yet-to-be-scheduled summer grand opening, though it'll be operational before the annual Broom Festival, September 5th through 7th. Team players on and off the field. Athletes lent a hand Tuesday at Drink Stand House Project. Gibson City. A group of Gibson City Melvin Sibley football players didn't need to be told what to do on Tuesday. They just went ahead and did it. About 25 members of the team headed to the 500 block of North Lot Boulevard in Gibson City, where two youngsters were selling lemonade for $1 a glass in the front yard. They had learned from teammate Reed Tompkins, who lives across the street, that the boys had the lemonade stand, and he suggested the players all head over after a practice. Soon the wide-eyed youngsters had more business than they could have imagined. Nearby, Derek Latham was working to rebuild his family's house, which had been heavily damaged by fire on a bitter cold January night. Helping him was Gavin Johnson, ironically a former member of the football team, who graduated with the class of 2024. Derek and Gavin were talking about how lifting the plywood was going to take a long time, Tompkins said. The players responded without being asked. They headed over to help. A job that would have taken much longer for Latham and Johnson alone was finished in about 20 minutes by the two dozen players. Teammate Logan Ward said the players showing up brought a smile to the faces of the youngsters selling lemonade. You could definitely see it made them happy and excited, Ward said. They were smiling and kept giving us refreshments while we were working. It was pretty cool. Ward quoted the old saying, "Many hands make light work." The players then traipsing over to help Latham and Johnson with the wood surely brightened their day as well. The football team has a lot of fans in the area. It's not just because of their success on the field. One of the biggest fans is their head coach, Chad Osberger. "That was a pretty cool thing they did last night," Osberger said. "That's one of the things I learned under former head coach Mike Allen. The football team is not just here to play football games. It's here to help our community." Augsburger said the team likes to help whenever it can. Last Saturday, for example, the players helped clean out at Shepherd's Closet, a downtown storefront that takes donated clothing and household items and turns them into affordable goods for families. Augsburger said the team has a group of responsible young men who took care of organizing the work at Shepherd's Closet while he was out of town at a teacher workshop in the Chicago area. "I kind of forgot about it. I put it out there for my seniors," he said. "They usually take care of it. It doesn't take much to get these guys going. They really take the lead on these things." Augsburger said the players lent a hand Tuesday on their own without any adult prompting. I didn't know anything about it until I saw it on Facebook, he said. Derek Latham was gratified by the players showing up and said he initially thought Johnson might have made a phone call asking the team to come by, but Johnson said he didn't know anything about it. Latham, whose day job is in construction, said work on the family's house has still been a learning process and has been slow but steady. He is returning the house to as close as its original look as possible with modern lumber and equipment. We don't have the architects they had back then, he said. Latham said Johnson and the football team were just some of the people who have come by to help him. This is definitely a God thing, he said. When I can't figure out how to get something done, somebody shows up and shows me how to do it. In a social media post, Ashley Latham, who works at Gibson City Melvin Sibley Middle School, said she is so incredibly blessed to work for GCMS and be a part of this amazing community. They have really pulled together for us. The Falcon community is truly one of a kind. Reed Tompkins said the volunteers get a lot of satisfaction helping others. It makes us feel good, but it also is giving back to the community, Tompkins said. A lot of people come out on Friday night to support us. Broncos receiver, a giver in Danville. 2014 DHS grad returning to hold annual football camp. When NFL player and Danville native Trent Sherfield has a chance to come home periodically, he tries to give back to the community that supported him. That's why the 2014 Danville High grad hosted a gala a couple months ago with his foundation, Diamonds Against the Rough, that raised almost $100,000 and donated to the Danville Rescue Mission Men's Shelter and his beloved alma mater to help its football program. Sherfield, 29, is returning home this weekend for his annual summer youth football camps. This time, that includes girls, as Danville Girls Flag Football Program is off to a great start and is ready to begin its second season. On Saturday, Sherfield will host his fifth annual free football camp, which will be expanding into an evening session under the lights at Ned Whitesell Field. Sherfield, a wide receiver now with the Denver Broncos, said he's excited about the format for this year's camp, which features a girls-only skill session in the morning and a multi-level evening format concluding with its high school session on the new turf field. The girls' skills camp, open to incoming 6th through 12th graders, will be from 8:30 to 9:30 a.m. in alignment with the national momentum behind girls flag football. The session will focus on skill development, teamwork, and confidence building, Sherfield said. The evening session will offer focused instruction and engagement for different age groups, 3rd to 5th graders at 5 p.m., 6th to 8th graders at 6 p.m., and high schoolers at 7:30 p.m. Sherfield will lead coach session alongside current and former Division I athletes and community leaders. The intent is to give participants an elite-style training exercise that focuses on fundamentals, discipline, and mentorship. The fifth year of this camp means a lot to me, Sherfield said. In partnership with my nonprofit, Diamonds Amongst the Rough, we're committed to offering opportunities that refine the future for young athletes. This is about more than football. It's about investing in our kids and our community. Registration has already 5 to 50 signed up. Sherfield will be coming from the Nashville, Tennessee area, where he's completing workouts and training ahead of the 2025 NFL season. He's in his eighth year in the league and joined the Broncos this spring after having played for the Arizona Cardinals, San Francisco 49ers, Miami Dolphins, Buffalo Bills, and Minnesota Vikings. It's always exciting to have a new opportunity, Sherfield said, adding he's been blessed to not have any injuries thus far. He also said the Broncos have been very welcoming. It's a young team. We're going to be doing a lot of great things, Sherfield said. He's also excited about this weekend's camp, with this year being a little different for the kids and a little more fun, he predicted. Sherfield said the reason he does it is because he didn't have a similar camp growing up, and he wants to pay it forward to those youth who love football and may go on to play at Division I or II schools, or wherever. He wants to pass down what he's been able to learn from his different coaches and teammates along the way. Our community is behind in some of the sport development, and I want to be able to bridge that gap for the younger generation, he said. He said the younger attendees do a lot of agility work, running through hurdles and tackling drills, and learning the fundamentals of the game. They run around and have a good time with cone drills and going into a game, Shurfield said. But for the older participants, the camp is like a college practice. Shurfield said it gives those who want to play at the next level a taste of playing in college, executing plays, and experiencing some of the things they should try to implement. That's what happened in the next level. Take it from class to grass, he said. Shurfield said he's also proud of his foundation and its first gala, which took place at the Turtle Run Banquet Center in May, and included an auction of some celebrity-provided items. Some of his former NFL teammates and friends were on hand for the event, including fellow Danville native Justin March Lillard. Shurfield said they planned for about 150 attendees, and it ended up standing room only. You could see God's hand in everything, Shurfield said. Plans for the next year's gala already are in the works. He said it will occur in June 2026, the weekend before Father's Day. His foundation is also planning a celebrity basketball tournament at the end of the gala weekend. The foundation recently donated $15,000 to the Danville Rescue Men's Shelter and $10,000 to the Danville High football program. Shurfield said he was scrolling on social media and the story from Michael Ewing, director of the men's shelter in Danville, moved him and inspiring the donation. It just touched me. Sorry, I lost my place here. It does trust me, he said. Shurfield said it's important for him and his immediate family, wife Marcella and two children, Trent Jr. 2 and Adelia 9 months, to give back. Several other family members still live in Danville, including his mom, Tedron Guard, stepdad, Jawan Guard, his grandmother, Chena Worthington, three uncles and numerous cousins. For me, it was when I always come home, I see a lot of the struggles we have here, Shurfield said. But when he left Danville after the gala, he said he left with more hope. Our community did a great job of showing up, he added. The goal with proceeds from the gala is to build a new multi-purpose sports facility for the youth in Danville and the surrounding area. We'll put it right in Danville for them, Shurfield said. He started Diamonds Amongst the Rough in 2018, his rookie year with the NFL, as a nonprofit foundation. He since has hosted youth football camps, which started in 2019, toy and backpack drives, and other events in Danville. With all that's on his plate at the moment, Shurfield said his previous plans for a downtown Danville pizzeria are not part of his focus at this time. He was working with the city a couple years ago with plans to open My Town Pizzeria in the former Danville Downtown Event Center, 38 North Vermillion Street. However, Shurfield said it would be a huge undertaking to run a restaurant. He's solely focused on his foundation at the moment, beside playing football. It's shelved for now, he said, so he's considering having the site turned into an event space to rent out. I know the area kind of needs that, he said. The foundation, to me, that's what's most important, Shurfield added. The community is thankful that Shurfield hasn't forgotten his roots. Mark Basis, director of Danville School District 118 Athletics, thanked Shurfield for his donation to the high school football program, saying it will go a long way for the team and morale. He said Shurfield's work ethic and determination were instilled in him in Danville, and he never forgets it. And he always comes back, and he always gives back, Basis said. Not being drafted and making it onto an NFL team is an incredible accomplishment. It's that grit, it's that determination, Basis added. He always thinks of us, and no matter where he goes, he's got Danville on his mind, and he's really got the kids of Danville on his mind. Protester pleads to property damage. apology to victim of paint attack was part of her sentence. A former Parkland College basketball player has pleaded guilty to spray painting an Israeli flag during a pro-Palestinian protest last year. Rylea Johnson, 21, was originally charged with a hate crime for the incident, but pleaded guilty to criminal damage of property and saw the initial charge dismissed. The charges stem from April 24, 2024, when a pro-Palestinian demonstration was held in Campustown on a block of Green Street between South 6th and South Wright Street. At least 300 demonstrators marched to demand the University of Illinois divest from companies and academic institutions with ties to Israel, shutting down that block for about 45 minutes. The march then moved to near the Swanland Administration Building, then the Henry Administration Building, as protesters marched on a stretch of Wright Street. A smaller group of pro-Israel demonstrators formed near the first location and continued to migrate with the demonstration, displaying Israeli flags and responding to chants or talking with pro-Palestinian protesters. Some pro-Palestinian demonstrators could be heard encouraging others not to engage with the counter-protest. In court Wednesday, Assistant State's Attorney Scott Larson said at some point during the protest in the area of Green and John Streets, a woman was waving an Israeli flag. Johnson approached her and used a can of spray paint to paint the flag and the woman's coat, damaging them, Larson said. As part of her negotiated plea, Johnson will be required to complete 30 hours of public service, the minimum sentence for criminal damage of property, and will be under court supervision for 12 months. Johnson was also required to pay the victim $300 in restitution and write her an apology letter. Larson gave a copy of the letter to Champaign County Judge Matt Lee and said it had already been sent to the victim. Since Johnson has no prior criminal record, her case will be dismissed at the end of the 12 months of court supervision, provided she complies with the other aspects of the sentence as well. Johnson's attorney, Chicago-based Shay Allen, requested that she be allowed to complete her public service hours outside of Champaign County. Lee said there was no requirement to complete them in county as long as she provides the appropriate information about her service. Top of the morning, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rosso. Bement's long-standing 4th of July celebration has spiked in popularity in recent years, is a full go after a temporary setback. In April, organizers were told the fireworks show, due to insurance issues, would no longer be held at Forest Preserve Park, where it has been for about 100 years, said Jody Schankweiler, a Bement resident since 1967. We were devastated. Up stepped Bement's Mike and Tina Durbin, who provided an alternative site to set off the fireworks, and the school district, which offered the high school football field for public, comfortable, and tree-free viewing. It's a happy ending to a tricky situation for a Pike County community that does Independence Day as well as anyone. 8 a.m. 5K, 2 p.m. parade, followed by activities at Forest Preserve Park, until 6 when the party moves to the high school. Schankweiler and the Bement Community Council are proud of what they considered an affordable, entertaining event, and tickled pink that everything fell into place and we were able to keep the tradition going, she said. It all worked out pretty well. Teacher of the Week, Chantel Mapson, Reading Interventionist, Franklin STEAM Academy. Since the start of her teaching career in Champaign in 1998, Chantel Mapson always hoped to become the type of teacher she liked the most in high school, who built close relationships with their students as they taught. After spending 9 years teaching in elementary schools, Mapson received her master's degree and became a reading interventionist for 6th, 7th, and 8th graders at Franklin STEAM Academy, a job she still holds today. I have continued to hone my knowledge, skills, and disposition to provide reading intervention to help increase reading skills from middle school to high school, as well as close the reading gap, she said. Mapson, who received another master's degree this summer. I find my work because children need to be able to read. Adults should be able to demonstrate all aspects of reading to be successful members of society. When students struggle to read and adults are unable to read, that is an us problem. It is important that I can be resourceful and responsive to students' need to comprehend what they read and love that what they read, and be able to navigate vocabulary and engage in genres at varying levels. It is important that students can be in learning spaces armed and empowered to participate, add context, and enhance their knowledge based on what they read. I became a teacher because I wanted to be one of the teachers like the favorites that I had. I wanted to be there for my students and their parents. I make an effort to build relationships with my students and their families, as well as my coworkers. My favorite or most unique lesson that I teach is reviewing a syllable types by playing VUNO. VUNO is a literacy game that reviews the syllable types with students in a fun and engaging way. They ask to play it whenever they have free time. My most fulfilling moments on the job are when students' reading is not as difficult for them any longer. The words are starting to make sense, the reading is getting easier, and the work doesn't seem as hard. When this happens, students feel that they have a chance and that they can be successful. I keep students engaged by setting high expectations. I have high expectations for them, but they know I want them to be successful. Something else I'm passionate about is learning. I am constantly signing up for workshops and professional development. I consider myself a lifelong learner. My favorite teacher and subject to study in school was Mr. Day, who taught English at Carson Senior Middle School in California. I always considered myself a good poet, but he helped me become more creative. If I weren't a teacher, I would be an instructional coach working with tutors, parents, advocates, and teachers on how to best support students with severe reading problems or dyslexia. I'm spending my summer relaxing and vacationing. I just completed my master's in special education in English as a second language, so I'm going to relax and reflect this summer. Playing to Cheers, new destination receiving rave reviews and sneak peek ahead of summer grand opening. The early reviews are in. The city's new Broom Palace is a hit, just as Pat Monahan figured it would be when he hatched the idea 2.5 years ago. Donors and others involved in creating the three-story, nearly 6,000-square-foot downtown destination were invited to a weekend sneak peek ahead of the summer grand opening. The feedback was unanimous, Monahan said. People liked what they saw. It was proud Arcola Monahan who had the light bulb moment to build a replica of a temporary Broomcorn Palace that was erected for the town's 1898 festival that goes by the same name. That year's event drew 20,000 people. The hope is that the new palace will attract thousands each year. Now that people see it, they realize what an asset it is to the community, said Monahan, who called the project a team effort. There were 26 major donors to the construction, with 100 donors total. Everybody has been pulling together to make it a success. Mick Howery, Economic Development Director of the Arcola Chamber of Commerce, visited the palace several times as construction progressed and said he loves the whole concept of the design, just everything about it. Howery said the palace will be a tourist pull and possibly a business pull. He took two groups to the palace on Monday. Howery said he will continue to take visitors to view the palace as I visit with people in Arcola, whether they're current visitors or out-of-town business prospects. Arcola calls itself the Broomhorn capital of the world. The palace includes a theater with a film about the history of broomcorn making, a history of craft brooms, a Libman's outlet, a Chamber of Commerce information center about local attractions, and the Arcola Museum on the second floor. The third floor, featuring an open deck on top of the palace, will be available for rental at some point. Monahan said a ribbon cutting and grand opening date have not been established. He's sure of one thing, though. It will be held prior to the annual Broomcorn Festival, which runs September 5th through 7th. Union employees could strike as early as Tuesday. Union employees have put Champaign County on notice that a strike could begin in just a few days. On Monday, county workers represented by AFSCME Local 31 AFSCME Council 31 Local 900 sent the administration a 5-day notice of their intent to strike. The notice period ends Tuesday, which is the earliest a strike could be called, AFSCME officials said. "We're proud to deliver crucial public services to the people of Champaign County," said Local 900 President Cecilia Phillips. "We don't want to strike, but management's lack of respect for us and our work is leaving us with no other option." The strike notice comes about a month after union members voted nearly unanimously, in late May to authorize a strike. County administration and AFSCME have been meeting with a mediator, and additional sessions are scheduled for next week, said County Executive Steve Summers. "We continue to see productive movement on both sides, and we are committed to continuing negotiations until we reach a fair and equitable agreement." Emily Rodriguez, chair of the county board's labor committee, said she was surprised by the notice, which was received by the county after its second mediation session. "I felt like we were making progress," Rodriguez said, told the News Gazette, "we're eager to get this behind us. Nobody looks forward to a strike, of course. It's their right to do so," she said. "We value our employees, and for 6 months we've been trying to do everything that we possibly can to get a contract that works for the county and for the AFSCME employees." According to the union, its members work in nearly every county department, including the jail, coroner's office, courthouse, highway department, animal control, and the Brookings Administration Center. The union's previous agreement with the county expired at the end of 2024, and union members are increasingly frustrated by management's disrespectful wage and benefit proposals and their lack of urgency when it comes to settling their contract, AFSCME officials said. The union has repeatedly stated that its top priorities include fair wages and affordable health insurance. Rodriguez said the county's budget is a limiting factor and added that there would have been more freedom to offer raises if the public safety sales tax referendum had been successful. The county has offered raises of 3% in year one and 2% in year two of its proposed contract. "They are now asking for a percent more than that, or over a percent. I think it's like 1.5 for each year," Rodriguez said. "And that's difficult for us. The increases that we've already offered are out of our budget, and we still need to think about staffing solutions and other changes when it comes time to balance our budget." She added that the county is looking for a mechanism to address AFSCME's concerns regarding rising health costs. She added that the county, "we believe that's a fair concern and we want to talk about it." Suspect admits to killing four, but motive remains a mystery. Death penalty off the table thanks to plea deal. A criminal justice student who avoided a potential death sentence by pleading guilty Wednesday to the brutal stabbing deaths of four University of Idaho students carefully planned the attack for months and took multiple steps to cover his tracks, the lead prosecutor said. Brian Koberger, who was a graduate student at nearby Washington State University, pleaded guilty to murder in the killings that terrified the Idaho campus and set off a nationwide search, which ended weeks later when he was arrested in Pennsylvania. Koberger remained impassive as he admitted to breaking into a rental home through a kitchen sliding door and killing the four friends who appeared to have no connection with him. Prosecutors did not reveal a motive behind the slayings. This has been Mary Mortland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, July 3rd, 2025. Please stay tuned for Part 2.